All right, nice to have everyone back with us on this Labor Day as we get ready for Giants and Dodgers. What a special treat for us, and he's going to be with us for the next hour, and that is Adam Copeland, the star of Tolbert and Copes. You can hear him Monday through Friday, 2 to 6 on KNBR 680. And he's with us today. Adam, how are you?
I'm good, Marty. This will be, I think this will be the longest amount of time since before COVID that you and I have just got to hang out and talk baseball, man. It's been... We do the weekend hits for 10 or 15 minutes or so, but we did this for a few years, just hanging on weekends talking ball. So it'll be nice to stretch out for an hour here.
Come on. It was great at the public house. And, you know, when you came in and took over and we said, well, let's see how Adam does. And, boy, you know, it's been just great talking ball with you all the time. You know your baseball. You know that. How did you grow up learning so much ball?
Well, it's funny. I always think about that speech that Mike Kruko gave at the 2010 World Series Parade where he says, somebody taught you the good book of Giants baseball. That was my mom, my stepmom, Mama Susie. I'm from a good baseball family. My grandfather was city manager out in Kansas City for years. And they were Royals fans as kids and then came back and were in Fresno and then in Berkeley. He was city manager of Berkeley then, my grandfather. And so we've got a rich history of he grew up in New York. He was a Yankee fan. My grandmother was a Brooklyn Dodger fan, and she used to tell me she'd buy tickets to go sit in center field when the Phillies came to town so she could look at Richie Ashburn's butt. So we've got a rich baseball history in my family, and baseball's it's a companion sport. And when you've got other people, you always talk about it. It's a talking sport. It's a game that promotes discussion and debate, and it's been a part of my life forever. And it's something that that I cherish. And even when seasons are down like this for the Giants, there's tons of storylines to go through and just things to discuss. So it's fun hearing you and Bruce talk, and now we get an opportunity to do it.
Yeah, every day you get another story. That's what I say with baseball. It's a soap opera, and it never stops. And this season has delivered. But let's you and I chat with Paul White a little bit. Paul, of course, one of the leading sports writers, I think, in the country. He's been on with me, for over 20 years now. And we always try to hook up during some of these markers of a baseball season, Labor Day being one of them. This is the last one as we sprint to the finish. Paul, nice to have you with us today.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well, Paul.
Doing good. Doing good. It's Labor Day, but you know this Washington National team, and if the season lasted maybe another couple of months, they may win the East. Come on.
No. You know, they've hit that nice sweet spot where you can just be a pain in the butt to the good teams. And, you know, they've gotten some good pitching in the last week or so, which they hadn't gotten all year. And Patrick Corbin actually got out of the second inning the other day. Almost looked like he was going to throw a complete game, it's kind of funny. For the last several weeks, all I've seen on like all the broadcasts of all these contending teams, well, we have the softest schedule in the majors going through September. Yeah, well, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, things get difficult, and just because you get to this time of year, it's the dog days of summer and into the final month here, right? So, as Marty said, a sprint to the finish. Speaking of the Nationals and speaking of the trade deadline, obviously they were big sellers then. Who do you think at this point, if you pull back and you look at all the trades that were made around deadline time, who do you think won the trade deadline as we enter September?
Wow. Well, that's an interesting call because, you know, the things we thought were going to be major impacts haven't been for the most part. I mean, you know, the Padres, you know, Soto's been okay. Josh Bell's been terrible, and Josh Hader's been worse. I think St. Louis. St. Louis plugged some holes. I mean, the Jordan Montgomery deal is monstrous for them. They needed to fill out their rotation because the one place they could not compete with the Brewers was starting pitching. And now they can. And then Michaelis has come back and pitched well. They just activated Flaherty today. If he can just give them some innings here and there, Wainwright's still solid. All of a sudden, the Cardinals are taking control. They've taken control of the Central Division. And I think that was just a huge, huge get for them.
Boy, good point. I think Seattle, for me, getting Castillo. Paul and Adam, you know, Seattle's got a rotation here. You know, Robbie Ray's throwing well. They've got Castillo, who's one of the best in baseball, and Kirby and Gilbert, some new guys. They've got a lockdown bullpen. Seattle, for me, getting Castillo legitimized that rotation.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And again, in the battle therein, the wild card battle, which is the best race we have left, really, the American League wild card races, that's huge for them because the other teams in there have struggled with pitching. I mean, Tampa Bay does their own thing. They pitch differently from everybody else and they make it work. Toronto has stayed in. Even though pitching, which was supposed to be a big improvement for them this season, has been terrible. I mean, Jose Berríos, he actually gave a pretty solid start the second game of their doubleheader today, but he's been terribly inconsistent. Kikuchi's been terrible, probably not a big shock. But, you know, they've scrambled with their starting pitching, and that's the reason they're back in the pack. That's the reason they're kind of battling, and you're right. Seattle now suddenly has that. And that's so huge for the teams in the wild card race because if and when you get to the playoffs, if you're going to pull off an upset, especially in that first round, if you don't have home advantage, you better be able to pitch.
Yeah, you got to have somebody to fire, and you got to have a couple of arms, as you mentioned, to come out and win a best of three there in that first round. While not a big trade deadline team, I think one of the best stories, if not the best story in all of baseball, if not for Seattle, it's got to be the Baltimore Orioles, right? I mean, how cool has that story been this year? They're probably a year too early, but it reminds you of some of the teams. Like, I mean, even you go back to 2009 with the Giants winning 88 games the year before Buster Posey comes up. Adley Rutschman comes up for them. They've got prospects that are brimming down there in the minor leagues. What do you think of Baltimore and maybe a little push here in the month of September?
Well, yeah, and they are still talking wild card, and it looks like they're going to drop a doubleheader to Toronto today in Baltimore, which would be a killer. I think it'll put them 4.5 back, although they still have two more games with the Blue Jays this week in Baltimore, and they still have two more series with them after this. So, you know, no, don't count them out. I mean, probably the lack of depth in a lot of places is catching up to them. And, you know, it's kind of funny if you look at the odds makers. Baltimore's been a game, two games out of a playoff spot here for the last several weeks, and they're still getting no love from Vegas, no love from any of the bookmakers. It's really interesting that, you know, it seems the assumption is sooner or later it's going to catch up to these guys. But you're right, that's a fabulous story, and they actually did a nice job at the trade deadline. They stuck with their plan in the sense that, okay, we're not going to go and give up any of our good young talent, yet they went ahead and traded Lopez, their closer, and everybody in Baltimore gasped. Oh, you know, that was a little bit unnoticed because of the angst in Milwaukee when they traded Hader. But Baltimore did the same thing, except they had this kid Bautista, who's better, and he was ready to step into that closer role, so they get some prospects in return and really don't give up a thing. Don't go away, don't deviate from their master plan going forward, and they made themselves better.
Boy, you know, Adam, you bring up a good point about the Orioles and their history. You go back to 1989? In 88, they lose their first 21 in a row. Come on, Cal Ripken Sr. is fired, and Cal Ripken Jr. almost quit. And then they, 89, they go down to the last weekend of the season trying to win the American League East and lose to Toronto. Back when they first turned the corner, and I was an Oriole fan in those days, it was 1960, and they find the Baby Birds finally became good, and they're chasing the Yankees in 1960 in September. The Yankees come into Baltimore and take four straight, and I'll see you later. So that's kind of what happened here, but the nice part for me is the ballpark. They have changed the ballpark. It's a bigger ballpark now. The home runs are not flying. And, Paul, you can comment on it. The Baltimore pitching staff is actually pretty good.
And it's a very good bullpen, and that's really what's made the difference. They follow the pattern so many teams are following now. We don't know who these guys are when they show up, but they're big arms. They've got a lot of velocity. They can throw strikes. And they're leveraging that, and they're using guys. You know, this Bautista kid's amazing. Dylan Tate, who's become one of their top setup guys, is very similar. They're starting to collect those guys. You know, the front office and the manager, Brandon Hyde, come out of the Houston system. They've kind of seen how that was done in Houston and how they collected guys. So, you know, and I think they're following a little bit of the Tampa Bay pattern. That's how Tampa Bay populates their bullpen. And it's a great way to do it on the cheap when you don't have a lot of money to spend, or you're not in a position where you want to start spending a lot of money as you build your team, you get these live young arms, and you bring in six or seven of them. Okay, if two or three of them are the real thing, you're in great shape.
I just love the idea of Marty talking. Cal Ripken Jr. thinks about quitting, right? He sort of went the other way on that one. Yeah, I could quit, or I could play for 11 more consecutive years and not miss a game.
Come on, the family was very upset. They were very when Cal Ripken
Senior was fired, right?
Canned. Well, and Craig Robinson took over, right?
Well, you know, but the problem with that whole scenario was, and I think Cal kind of figured it out. Cal Jr. figured it out. Cal Senior was the organizational guy who'd been around forever. And I don't think a lot of people in the front office really wanted to ever make him the manager. They gave him the job when they knew the team was going to be horrible for a couple of years. So that, you know, the fans couldn't scream as loud. And I think Cal Jr. knew they set him up a little bit.
Well, ultimately, it worked out for Cal Jr., I think.
Good point.
I wanted to ask you just about Jacob DeGrom. We saw what he did against the Dodgers earlier this week. Mookie Betts was saying he may be the best of all time. There may be nobody better in baseball right now. Like, if you need to win one ball game, if you need to send somebody out there, Jacob DeGrom coming off of an arm injury or a shoulder injury, whatever he was dealing with, the issue with him is just that he's never healthy for the course of an entire season. But when he's out there, there's maybe nobody better. I mean, you'd have to go back through the all-time greats to find people with this good of stuff. Where are you on Jacob DeGrom, and what do you think his future holds? I know he's got a free agency coming up here, hasn't been totally healthy, but he's exciting to watch, man. He's a lot of fun.
Well, that's the key, is the health thing, you know, and it scares the heck out of a lot of people. You were talking about Washington, you know, when they decided after they won the World Series, okay, which guys do we keep and who don't we keep? Well, they hitched their wagon to Steven Strasburg, mm-hmm. you know, how'd that work, you know? But again, a great arm, but, you know, yeah, you're right. And DeGrom might be really starting to separate himself from the pack, because the other guys you talk about, who would you want for one game? You know, for the last several years, you probably would have said Max Scherzer. Well, DeGrom's pitching better than Scherzer on the same staff right now. You might have said Justin Verlander until he got hurt last week. He was every bit as good this season. But, again, can you depend on him to be 100% now going forward? So, you know, DeGrom's the guy, but he's the guy with an asterisk. And it's going to be scary. It's going to be really interesting to see how they put together a contract and offers from wherever they may come from. How do you build that? How do you protect yourself? You know, because a healthy Jacob DeGrom is worth more than probably any pitcher's ever been paid. But do you handcuff yourself with that contract?
We're the Mets. And we're the Mets, and our owner has $8 billion. We're not worried.
No, I think they're fine.
You know, that's a great point right now, and they still haven't won with you know this regime. So that you're right. They're gonna, you know, they remind me a little bit of the Dodgers when the current Dodger regime came in. We are going to spend and spend and spend at least until we win it once, and then we'll see where we go from there. And I think that's where the Mets are.
Adam, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Marty. I thought Marty was jumping back in there.
Yeah, I just threw my Met thing out.
Oh, you're good. No worries. Any chance to take a shot at the Mets is all good. Talking to Paul White, just whipping around baseball here. In terms of the Dodgers, I mean, they're having they're insane, right? I mean, the National League is going to have a lot of fun matchups, I think, and anything can happen when you get to the playoffs. There's a lot of great pitching in the National League. But in terms of teams that could match up with the Dodgers in a playoff series, I mean, the Dodgers' pitching has been banged up, but they got Dustin May back, Clayton Kershaw working his way back. We'll see what happens with Tony Gonsolin and Urias. What do you make of the Dodgers? Obviously, they're the team to beat. Are the Mets the last great hope for us Giants fans out here to take down the Dodgers, or do you think a team like the Braves or the Phillies or somebody like that could do some damage?
Well, I think what it comes down to, the Dodgers have by far the most talent in the league, easily. But they're, like you say, their pitching is vulnerable because they have to kind of guess right going into. You mentioned all those names, and every one of them healthy could walk through a play. You know, you could line them all up, and you would dominate the postseason. You know, but you don't know. You're not sure what you're going to get, and who you can depend on at this point. And especially guys coming off seasons where they've had a bunch of injuries. How deep can they go into games? And that's where I think is going to be crucial in the playoffs, because I still think the Dodger bullpen, a lot of good arms, but it's not nearly up to the standard of a lot of the other bullpens in baseball. And I think good offensive teams, the Braves certainly are that. The Mets are very interesting. They're versatile. They're a grinded-out offensive team. Buck Showalter deserves a ton of credit for how he's changed the attitude there, especially offensively. I think if you can limit Dodgers starters to 5 and 6 innings, you can meet them.
Well, that's the story of baseball today. I don't care who you are. You're going to need a bullpen. That's why I like Seattle. Seattle's got and I like Cleveland, even though Cleveland can't hit a lick right now. And,
right.
And Plesac, their pitcher, got so upset he hit the mound
punched
with his
ground.
Hand.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the mound made of dirt? And he hit it with his hand and broke his hand. And then the other guy, Savali's got a bad elbow. But Cleveland's bullpen is great. So they just don't. They stopped hitting. They stopped hitting. But all right,
but
that's
in the right division to get away with it.
Yeah, they did. And look, Dylan, what did you guys think of this? Dylan Cease the other night, and this was the argument in Chicago Sports Talk yesterday, Adam. Dylan Cease has got 8 2/3 no hitter,
right.
And little Luis Arraez comes up. We saw him against the Giants last week, little slap hitter, and the argument was they should have pitched around him to get right on right. So Cease could get his no-hitter because Arraez belted a base hit into right field. What do you think of that?
You got to go get the hitter, man. I don't think you intentionally walked the guy to go get a better matchup. I mean, what was the score in the ball game?
13-0.
I don't think so. I think you just go get him. Yeah,
that's like taking the last day of the season off so you win the batting.
Exactly. I'm with you 100%. Last time I checked, Ted Williams went 6 for 8 in 19 right in 41 or whatever it was.
That's correct.
A few years ago, DJ LeMahieu won one in Colorado because he took the day off.
Yeah, well.
Well, people, you know, they do it to hit 300. They do it. So we've seen it throughout baseball.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Rodon for a minute. Paul, out here, look, the guy has done everything possible to have a great season. You know, you got Alcantara. You got so many good Gonsolin. You have so many people in a Cy Young race. He's not going to get the love that he probably deserves. But I said it to Bruce, and I'll say it to you guys. I think the Giants have to take a risk and say, okay, we don't like the side pitchers for big contracts. We didn't do it with Gausman. But we're actually going to go after this guy, and we're gonna sign him. It's money. We've got money. Because this ball club needs an anchor. It needs an anchor pitcher in the front because their offense, who knows what it's going to be next year. And I say they go after him and just don't accept, well, he's going to opt out and walk away. What do you guys think? Adam, you go.
Well, I told you this yesterday, and I would do whatever you can to keep him. I don't know about the number of years he's going to want. If you could get away with a 4-year deal or something for him, I think that would be fantastic. And then you pay him whatever he's looking for. You were willing to fork over the 22-plus for this year and for next year. I mean, he's exceeded expectations. He's proved that this is who he is. He's not a reclamation project or anything like when you brought Kevin Gausman in, and Gausman is gone now, and you had an opportunity to keep him and you went and got Rodon instead. I think they've got to do everything they can, because in this division with all the left-handed bats and with all the power they're going to see, I mean, you're going to see a Juan Soto all of next year. You're going to get that whole Dodger lineup again. I think you need to have pitchers at the top of this rotation. Obviously, Logan Webb has proven he can be the ace of a staff, but having a 1-2 punch, and like we were talking about with the Mariners, getting into a wild card round there, playing a best of three, you got to have a couple of bullets you can fire there. And having Rodon is one of the best in all of the National League, one of the best in baseball. So when Farhan said the other day, nothing's off the table, they got to you know, make big splashes or go out and fix this thing, I think that includes or involves getting into a conversation with bringing Rodon back. And I think you got to be looking at 4 or 5 years and pay in the guy to come back and stay here.
What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Just as Adam was talking, I just pulled up the quote, the exact same quote from the interview of Farhan the other day. And that's absolutely it. Well, you said it, sir. Let's see it. And because as Marty just said, there's nobody on the offense that you're going to, you know, hitch your wagon to and say, this is our guy going forward. Nobody on the current roster. There might be guys out there if you want to go for it, but you've got a guy right now that, if I had to vote the Cy Young, you vote top five, and I looked at this about a week ago and I haven't gone back. At that point, I would have had Rodon third, but that included Gonsolin ahead of him, and I'd have to relook at that depending how long Gonsolin's out. And right now, I think the only other guy better than him for the season has been Alcantara, and it's not that big a margin. And, you know, okay, Freed, Gallon's on this roll right now. But no, this guy, it's not like you're looking at a 35-year-old guy, you know. No, lock him up. You're right. Make him your guy. And you've got to go, but you're going to have to convince him, too. Okay, you're not the only guy we're going to sign. We are trying to go forward. We are trying to step up. We are trying to compete with the big boys in the free agent market and, you know, convince him that it's worth his while to stay.
Yep, get him and then sign Correa at short. I would go after him. I just like the way he plays. And the Aaron Judge thing, look, he's going to hit 60. The Mets are having a great season. The Yankees they have to compete in New York.
Yeah.
I just don't see him leaving. I just don't see him leaving the Mets. Of course, he may just be stoking the flames a little bit, saying how much he loved the Giants. And, Adam, you think there's any hope that the Giants legitimately go after Aaron Judge?
I think you have to believe that there's hope. And when Farhan says those comments, I mean, Paul just said it. Yeah, all right, time to put some money where your mouth is. Then if you're going to come out and say that, then you've got to make a run at some of these guys. So will they kick the tires on him if he's looking for a 10-year deal? I mean, that's where things get hairy, right? Because he wanted the big deal from the Yankees, and he'll be, what, 30 years old or 31 years old,
31,
getting close to it by the time the season starts next year. So, yeah, I would love to see Aaron Judge in a Giants uniform for the next decade. Is it feasible or does it make sense? That I don't know yet, but if you're believing in your system, and the Giants have said they still do, even though they've taken a step back this year, if you believe that some of these guys will be here in the next few years, then maybe there is something that warrants that. But I'm with you. If it's a Carlos Correa, or I don't know if it'll be Xander Bogaerts, or if they'll make a run at Trey Turner, but they've got to throw some money at some of these big names, and I think it starts with Rodon.
I like it. No,
you know, I think the one thing about Judge is, look, if he hits 65 home runs, it doesn't really matter where he is. But if you own the New York market as a player, there is no reason in the world for you to leave the New York market. And with the Mets, you just talked about the Mets. They'll make sure the Yankees at least have to pay the going rate, because the Yankees aren't going to let him walk across town.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Who's the last Yankee free agent who came up as a free agent that was a big-time player that the Yankees wanted to keep that left town to go somewhere else? Sort of to back up Paul's point here. I was thinking about this the other day. The last time they had a guy that they brought up, or he was their player and came through their system, then became a free agent and they wanted to keep him, I can't remember a guy who just left on his own for more money than whatever the Yankees were going to give him.
Robinson Cano.
There you go. There's one.
I mean, the Yankees will tell you they weren't 100% sold, and I know they had some concerns about him. They were afraid he was going to grow up to be Alfonso Soriano a little bit, but no, they wanted them. You know, they'll tell you different things after he left, but yeah, they were stunned that he left.
What's the matter with Alfonso Soriano? I loved Alfonso Soriano.
I know, but Yankees were sour on him. They thought he was unteachable when he was in their system, and he may have been at that point. He was very immature. I know he drove Joe Torre crazy because they couldn't get him to just work on things he needed to work on. You know, he just said, "I'm good. I'm good. I'm
he's
fine."
Raw. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Didn't he go to Washington? Is that where Frank Robinson?
And he lit it up, and he started cashing in from there. Yeah.
Yeah, he got traded for A-Rod, didn't he? Wasn't he part of that deal to Texas first, and then to Washington and Chicago?
Yeah.
Good memory, boy. Adam, you got it. I like this. Yeah. Good memory. Very good.
I liked Soriano. He was like 40-40 guy almost, wasn't he?
He was.
There you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he ended up on the Cubs, and that was the end of it.
That's right. Giants made a run at him. He and El Caballo, Carlos.
But he's a perfect example. What if you'd given him a 10-year contract? Wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
Boy. All right, so Houston, most people are conceding Houston in the American League. Paul, where do you see the National League ending up here? How's this going to play out? And I like the three-game play-in. I like it.
Too. It's fun.
I think it's really going to be interesting. But where does it end up?
You know, the team that I can't walk away from, because I think they have absolutely underachieved all year long and are going to end up in the playoffs, is still the Phillies. They're not as good as everybody else, but I think they have one good run in them, and I think they're going to make some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, the noise they're going to make is a thud.
Thud, I know. I knew that was coming. Because, yeah, what scares me now, that Nola hasn't pitched well lately, and Wheeler's
hurt. No, Wheeler's hurt.
Yeah, but no, I think somebody in the East will make a run. And I think Atlanta's in a better position right now. All of a sudden, their pitching is ridiculous. You know, everybody wants to talk about Harris as the rookie of the year. He might not be the rookie of the team this year. Strider is so good right now. And you got Strider and Freed, and Charlie Morton is the veteran guy in there. And that's a nice, deep bullpen. I know Jansen scares the heck out of you, but or all of us, but the manager is not afraid to go to his other guys. And he picked up Iglesias, and he's got Minter, who's a totally below the radar, really effective guy. And he's, they're poised again to do it, but they've got to be healthy. And the other guy they need to really step up in the postseason would be Matt Olson, who's been up and down all year.
Well, they got a 20-game winner coming in, Kyle
Wright. Kyle Wright, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
He's going to win 20. You know who the best pitcher is lately is Urias.
He looked really good that last couple starts. You're right.
Isn't he?
Great.
He's really good. Adam, where do you see it? Where does the National League end up?
Well, I hate to say Dodgers. I don't want it to be the Dodgers. And I'm looking at the Braves, too. I'm looking at that pitching. We're looking at what we saw last year from Atlanta. There's no reason to believe they can't go out and do this again. And I'm just so impressed with the way they've put that team together, from the team-friendly contracts for guys like Ozzie Albies. And obviously Acuna's back. They locked up Austin Riley for 10 years at $200 million or something like that. They've got Matt Olson locked up now. Michael Harris, you mentioned, the young player, and this young core. The Braves should be a dangerous team for the next, 6-7 years with just this core of players, and maybe beyond that with the offense they have. So my thought would be they've got the experience. They've done this before. They went out and they obviously knocked the Dodgers off last year. They're a dangerous team. And again, if you have the pitching and you've got some of that experience, I think they're a team to beat. But you mentioned St. Louis earlier. Two guys in the middle of that lineup. I mean, Arenado and Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt's still in the mix for a triple crown right now. I just can't believe what he's doing in an age where nobody hits for average. This guy's hitting like .330. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you're talking about young players. I just want to say one thing. Marty and I talked the other day about all the young hitters that Arizona's brought up in the last, and it was always, who knows if they have any pitching coming. Well, they brought up probably the best of their young pitching prospects, a kid named Ryan Nelson, to start today. He is mowing down the Padres today in San Diego. And look out for that team next year.
Well, who doesn't mow down the Padres?
I know, but dude, I'm watching the kid pitch, and this kid's legit. I mean, they've been talking about him for quite a while, and this is the first of several that they're bringing up. If they suddenly have some pitching to go along with a lot of those young bats that they're bringing up, and they're going to be trouble next year and probably 2 years away from being a really good team.
No, I see him play a lot, and I like him. They don't give away at bats. They hustle. They have a ceiling. Who knows what it's going to be, and they're definitely on the upswing.
That's a removable ceiling, right?
Yes, it's a retractable roof. That's right.
Exactly.
Or maybe he meant panels, too. You can open the panels and get some air in there.
It's 107 here, so they're going to keep it closed. Even if they're in San Diego, they're going to keep it closed. Well, Paul, it's a pleasure having you on, as always. It's always a lot of fun. We probably have one more show in us before the season ends, so we'll catch up with you again.
I'll be here.
Great chatting, Paul.
All right, take care, guys.
See you, man.
All right. I love talking ball with him. Adam, I've been talking ball with him, God, for over 20 years.
Well, I just, like anybody, you can, and you're like this too, you just whip around everybody. Somebody who pays attention to the league and the storylines and what guys are doing. He's a real fan of the game, right? He covers the game, but he's a big fan. And so much like me and you, I mean, I was just sitting around watching baseball this morning. You know, now I'm watching Texas and Houston right here in the studio. So same thing. You just watch guys. You find players you like. You see little trends. And you mentioned the talent in Arizona. You and I talked about that a bit last week. I mean, that team is coming. It's a team the Giants need to be worried about. They're sitting right in front of them there. But, they're a talented young team, I think, with some frontline starters in that rotation. Arizona's a team to pay attention to, for sure.
Well, Zach Gallen, he's looking like Hershiser.
Yeah.
And then Merrill Kelly, just eats
it's like
up
Cy Young against the Giants. It's crazy.
Yeah, now they've got this Nelson kid today. Henry has pitched well, so we'll see where that goes. But Paul White, he created the USA Today Baseball Weekly. When it first came out, he was the creator of it. So he's got a good background in baseball.
Good background.
All right, we'll take a break. Out of the break, Matt Falcon is going to join Adam and I, and he's going to give his take on the 2022 season with the Giants, and Adam and I will talk about it. So we got lot more coming up. This is fun.
Yeah.
On a Labor Day. It's nice to talk ball. Adam Copeland, Marty Lurie, Matt Falcon. Raff is on the board. It's Labor Day, and we've got baseball tonight, Giants-Dodgers. Good day. All right, more coming up on the Sports Leader.